All right, here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, a podcast to promote and improve your practice as an athletic trainer. I am Jeremy Jackson, host of the show. We're talking with Dr. Paul Shoup about turf toe. Joseph Everhart is going to be running the interview. This is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/turftoe. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/turftoe. Thanks for joining us live at the 2023 Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update. You got it, Joseph.
Good morning, everybody. A few of y'all met me yesterday, but for y'all who weren't with us yesterday, my name is Joseph Everhart. I am an associate athletic trainer at Dawson High School at Pearland ISD. I'm also a part of SWATA District 6 Executive Board as the member at large, and I have the great luxury of interviewing this amazing doctor who gave this great presentation today about turf injuries and the research of turf. I found it personally an interesting doctor. As today in the media, like you talk about with big names like Odell Beckham Jr. and all these people in the NFL and the NFLPA talking about how turf is the cause of the injury. And to summarize your research briefly, what we're seeing trends, but the hard part is turf's here to stay. Being at a high school as myself, I guess the hard hitting question for athletic trainers is what can I do to benefit my athlete since turf is here to stay?
So thanks for having me this morning. Some of the things is just making sure your field is well-maintained. I think that's inevitably important. I'm never around during the week. I'm just there Friday nights, and so I'm not sure the maintenance that goes into it, but I'm sure it does. Proper personal protective equipment is also significantly important. I know a lot of your football players like to wear narrow cleats, which can contribute to lower extremity injuries just based on the cleat pattern, the cleat length, and the width of the shoe itself. So part of it is educating your athletes on the proper equipment and what to wear. We talk about the time of day we practice and those sort of things, and that's important just to prevent the non-athletic injuries as well.
Yes, doctor, I know that's something that I talk about with my athletes all the time, this term called drip. We have to look nice all the time, and this recent cleat that's populated in my student population, it's like a sock cleat. It doesn't come with any laces. Me and my background, I'm all about hip back mobility. I'm all about a proper arch. I did my graduate assistant at Angelo State. I had a lot of track and field experience. So I noticed when we're wearing proper footwear, we're having less risk of injury. When our hip and core is activated, we're protecting our body. And what I found interesting on two aspects of yours, and it's going to come with a question, is that you noticed, as you spoke on, about the cleat length and its benefit in decreasing injury. But in addition, you stated, based off research, that hip injuries are basically very similar regardless of surface. I was curious if there's any data resorting or contributing to the fact of core activation in that type and core strength. I mean, we're getting into some nitty-gritties, but on top of that, if maybe any research was done about laces and appropriately tying the shoe with appropriate arch supports.
So great questions. I'd have to actually look into that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are studies there for my particular presentation. I didn't delve into it.
That's fine. These are my niches.
For sure. I think those are very important questions. I think your core strengthening is a very pertinent point as well. I think that can go across the board, whether you play on turf or whether you play on a basketball court.
Body proprioception.
Or whatever, is significantly important.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for that. Like I said, body proprioception, core. I with my track and field and my football athletes at Angelo State, every day my first thing was, let's get our hips in line. Let's make sure they're open and mobile. And I found that ironic that based off surfaces, we didn't see a dramatic increase. And the only thing that came to mind was that large acetabulum given its support. So our body's natural support is our transverse abdominis. So if I can expand that and expand that. So I appreciate you entertaining my interests. The other thing that I found quite interesting in your presentation was the dramatic increase of PCL injuries, specifically in D1 athletes. Now, from my education, the common mechanism of injury for PCL is that dashboard injury, coming from direct force on that anterior tibia when we're in that 90-90 position. Is there any research or for your medical background and knowledge, why is it that we're seeing more prominence of possibly that mechanism from that turf?
So when it's not a dashboard injury, the common mechanism is you fall onto a knee bent at 90 degrees.
Okay.
Your toe is interacted, your cleat's stuck in the turf, so it's not giving way. So your foot's sort of in this dorsiflex position, and you land on that knee with all the force going back through, as opposed to if the, mm-hmm. the shoe gives out,
yes,
you're
sir.
Landing on less than a 90-degree surface.
So me being the overexcited athletic trainer I am, is there any correlation we've noticed to gastroc weakness in regards to? Now, that's just me putting two to two. If we're having the dorsiflexion, the cleat length, all those things, I feel like the gastrocnemius, which is a commonly overtight muscle, especially in football players, because we think ought to be quick pop, right? I didn't know if that you had any opinion on that.
So I think it's a valid argument.
Okay.
Don't have enough
that's
science
fine.
Or background to put it, but I do think that that'd be an interesting thing to study.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So then the last question I have, because I know you're a busy man and you got a lot to do and you're answering all my questions at the exact precision I knew you would. We talked a lot about the history of turf and artificial turf in your presentation today. And I was curious, as we've moved forward in this research, added our cushion padding, looking for biodegradables, protections, would you say that we've moved into a safer direction? Would you say, because the only thing I can think of is you see in the news with this slit turf and, you know, prominent players stating that that's what's caused their injury because their cleats are sticking, whatever the case may be. And I'm not saying they have or have not done their research, but are we truly moving to a safer surface?
I think we are. I think we're moving to a safer surface for our lower level athletes. I think our higher level athletes, they just have different muscle build and different
okay.
muscle types, which may lead to some of that injury at a higher level. I do think the technology that's going into it is moving it towards a safer playing surface. I don't know there's much we can do about the heat and some mm-hmm. of the other things, and they are looking into that, hence the look into the coconut fill, the walnut
yes, sir.
Stuff and all of that. I think we are moving there. The importance here is that turf isn't going away.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what we do. We've moved in that direction. I don't think we'll ever go back to grass. And so with technology moving forward, I do think it's becoming safer.
Yes, sir.
I don't think it'll ever be 100% safe. But with education, proper maintenance, I think we can make it as safe as it can be.
Well, thank you, doctor. I appreciate your time.
So I have a couple questions. I saw that you mentioned the coconut or the cork. Those things are natural materials that would rot. Putting a turf on is a quite lengthy and expensive process. How does that make sense for a high school field to put coconut, something that might rot, underneath there?
So part of it is just the turnover of it. So we all get that rubber junk in our shoes every time you step on the field. And so it's got to be properly maintained. And so there's, when you use the proper rakes, the proper equipment to just shift it around, that's a valid question, especially in a wet, humid environment like it is here. And it's not being used a ton yet, and so I think that's yet to come. And we may determine down years from now that was a bad idea.
What's exciting to add on to that conversation, my high school rotation in undergrad, I graduated from Texas A&M Corpus Christi in 2019. I had a rotation with Gregory Portland High School, and they did the coconut turf. They said, we're one of the first in our area to the coconut turf. Now, I'm not saying that's true or not true, but the amount of rules and regulation and the discussion, and it was a cool admin experience for me my senior year of my KD program, as they discussed that there was they had to hire 3 more maintenance people. They had to get brand new equipment. They didn't allow Gatorade on the field because that would tarnish, and because the coconut could stain, it could discolor the field, more like the rubber, how it's not color effective. So, no Gatorade on the field. They were able to play with rain, but they were constantly rinsing the field, which I found interesting, Jeremy, was one of the things that they said they used to maintain it. Now, whether that's pro or con, I cannot say. But I will say on a personal experience, my feet didn't hurt as much. For an athletic trainer, I know that goes a long way. And I used Adidas Boost all through college. We were Adidas school. I still use those here on campus. And I found that interesting. I felt better in my knees. I felt better in my back. And I could see how that biodegradable maybe is assisting in that.
It is interesting. Rice uses wood and not rubber on their field. And so I thought that interesting when we played there last season.
Did you notice any sort of difference?
Thinking back, I think your point about your feet being sore on these fields, major problem.
Yes.
I mean, we wear Nikes or whatever we're wearing. Feet hurt at the end of the day on the rubber, and there's less of that impact. We did have in our Rice game, I don't think it makes a difference in injury. We had an ankle fracture that game. We had a significant hamstring rupture and a couple other things. So I don't think it makes a difference as far as the interaction of the cleat, but it may make it in as far as the softness and that.
And the last turf thing I'll add, I know Pearland ISD, we just revamped our turfs. And I don't know the company, but essentially we had an affiliate that they added this coolant pad beneath our turf to help. Supposedly, rather than 10 degrees hotter, it was only 7.5. And I'll say that what I found interesting is it made the field feel very soft and almost a little like soft mattressy. A lot of the athletes this year, now I'm talking about high school athletes who think they're really good, and some of them are and some of them may not be, but the dynamic, especially the first couple games when the turf was still being broken in because it finished right before season, it was extremely soft, loose is almost the descriptive word I use. And I'm not sure if that's going to be a pro and con going forward. I didn't feel an environmental change. We still had heat-related illnesses this year, as you expect. But I did find that interesting that I don't know if the answer was necessarily to put a coolant pad beneath. Maybe that made it a little too spongy.
Yeah.
Not an expert, but another observation as we talk about different types of turf.
Right, and then you mentioned at the beginning of your presentation your time in the military where y'all would, you know, sweep and make sure there was no foreign debris as part of the turf thing. Can you talk just briefly about your time serving our country?
I served in the Navy for 12 years. Loved it. I trained as an intern, and then I was 3 years as a flight surgeon with the Marines, serving in an F-18 squadron. Opportunity to go all over the world with that, and then finished my ortho training in San Diego, and then I spent 4 years as an orthopedic surgeon in Japan and Florida serving and loved it. They weren't allowing me to do sports medicine, which is what I came to Houston to do fellowship for, and so nothing but good to say about the Navy and those that serve.
Well, thank you for your service, Doctor.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and so kind of just, I know this isn't what the main topic was, but people who maybe go to the military to become physical therapists or surgeons, can you just, again, you said nothing but good to say about it. So just kind of encourage them what they should or what they maybe should think about before.
So for me, it was an avenue for me to pay for medical school. Mm. They paid for me to go to George Washington University. And so one thing is, well-paid, very well-educated, no matter where I go in the world and in the country, the training that we got is respected. Same thing for physical therapy, and other than at the Naval Academy and probably West Point and Air Force Academy, there's not a lot of athletic trainers in the military, but certainly you get that experience working with different type of teams. And I think the opportunities that you get serving are far outweigh the downsides of deployment or I guess other unfriendly things of being told where you have to be, when you have to be there, and mm-hmm. when you get to move and where you have to move to. Overall, very positive. I think the Navy and all the armed forces provide great education. Both in person and then online learning. A lot of the corpsmen, which we could equate to a medical assistant that we worked with, would enlist, have their education paid for while they're working on campus, and several of the individuals I worked with would graduate with a 4-year degree while they're on active duty service at no cost to them.
So fantastic option. Again, you know, as athletic trainers, we want to encourage people to move towards athletic training, but we also want to encourage them towards a good medical community. So that's a fantastic option of not having to be $250,000 in debt by the time you graduate.
Right. I 100% concur on my end, being the young generation who has student debt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully the young athletic trainer crowd listening to this can look at that as an option if you're going to physical therapy or medical school, or even as an athletic trainer, you know, you can serve and be a maybe an MA
and get that experience, interaction.
I was just going to say that, Jeremy, as the young professional moving to that MAT realm, we can use those avenues of cost effectiveness, especially with graduate school being expensive. Maybe you're getting your four-year degree with your active service and you're having that experience, whether it's in the OR, as an MA, maybe a PA, or even a physician extender-like role, and then you go get your MAT, and it prepares you directly for those extended levels of medicine that athletic trainer are going in, that extra domain, that combat medicine, all of those things that are just going to benefit you better and make you more marketable in our profession that possibly could increase your costs and get you paid more on your way out. And maybe you're only paying for 2 years of school versus six. So,
or using the GI Bill to pay for zero.
Even better, I forget about the legislative actions. I mean, you're getting a lot of it taken care of, and it opens the doors to more experiences for you to be a different expert in your field.
All right, Dr. Paul Shoup, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's going to be the best way to do that?
Best way is through our clinic at, I work at the Memorial Hermann Rocket Sports Medicine Institute, through UT Physicians. Probably contacting my office, or I'm happy to give my email address as well.
All right. Well, I'll include your email address in the show notes. And again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/turftoe with Dr. Paul Shoup and Joseph Eberhardt. We're live at the 2023 Sports Medicine Update. Joseph is big on social media, and the best way, you said ATC Mojo, underscore Mojo.
Underscore Mojo,
Instagram.
Yep.
So if you want to get a hold of Joseph and you can't remember any of the other things, and reach out to Joseph and he can connect you with Dr. Paul Shoup. So for Jeremy, Sports Medicine Broadcast, that is a wrap.